Okay, so we've been talking about Jama Niyama, and as I stated, Jama Niyama are the first steps to Ashtanga Yoga, and in Jama Niyama we are basically talking about Jama. We said Jama means to control, and from the word Yama or Jama comes the word jantra, jantra or yantra. Yantra means the machine that gives a desired output. We said that the practice of Jama Niyama was very important because although our goal is spiritual in nature, we still have to live in the external world, external environment, where we have to deal with the material reality, mundane reality. So while going through the mundane reality, we have to reach the spiritual world. And in order to continue our spiritual journey, we need to have a proper balance of mind. And Jama Niyama, practice of Jama Niyama, are fundamentally necessary in order so that we have proper control, proper balance of mind. The jantra of Jama, or the machine of Jama, or the device of Jama, is composed of five upayantra. And those five upayantras are the five principles of Jama. And we've already completed talking about ahimsa. And so today we're going to talk about satya. Satya. What is the definition of satya? When we do something with an intention of the hita of the other person, of the well-being of the other person. Our actions, when they are motivated by the well-being of other person, that is called satya. For the hita of the others. In Sanskrit, there are four words: kalyana, kshema, hita and shubha. Or I should say kalyana, kshema, shubha and hita. Kalyana and kshema refer to the spiritual well-being. Whereas shubha refers to spiritual well-being as well as intellectual or well-being of the mind. It's called shubha. Suffix the means to give, giver. Shubhada means one who gives spiritual and intellectual well-being. And for a feminine gender, you add an A, becomes Shubhada, for example. So Shubha means spiritual well-being as well as intellectual well-being of the mind. And Hita refers to well-being in the mundane, psychic and spiritual, all worlds. That is called hita. So when your action is motivated or are intended for the hita of the other person, that is called satya. This satya is one of the upayantra of yama. Now, why is this issue of the well-being of the others? And you have another word in Sanskrit, it's called rita. Rita means narration of the actual event of the past. That is called rita. Suppose this tape recorder is recording everything. You go back and play it back. It will exactly repeat what was said before. So this is rita. Rita means exact repetition of the past, repetition of the fact. So in order to practice rita, what do you need? You need a memory. As long as you have a sharp memory, you can practice rita. But in the practice of satya, you not only have to have a concept of rita or memory, but at the same time, you must properly use your judgment, viveka. Viveka is important. By proper judgment, you have to use the past and knowledge of the past. So there is a requirement that you should use proper thinking. You cannot simply just narrate the past and call that satya. That is rita. So rita may or may not be a satya. And in Jama Niyama, in the sadhana of Jama, we are talking about satya, following satya. And in rita, following of the rita, there is no motivation of either hita or ahita, simply repetition. So this is not the practice of satya. Now, there are people who will abuse these for their own well-being. They will use it to exploit people, stating that I'm practicing satya. Satya is not, I'm not practicing rita, I'm practicing satya. No. Satya is for the well-being of the others, not your own selfish endeavors. People abuse in the name of satya and say that they are following satya, but actually they are simply following their own selfish desire. They are not doing so for the well-being of the others. They are doing so for their own selfish gain. Whenever you construct something for the well-being of the other, for example, a machine is created for the well-being of the society. A dog is trained in order to perform certain action of humanitarian nature. Or a device is created. But when that dog or when that device goes haywire and starts going against the well-being of the society, you have to destroy that dog. You have to destroy that machine, because that machine does not have ability to think what is right and wrong. So in order for you to practice satya, you must have a clear awareness of what is best for the well-being of those others. And you should not be motivated by your self-gain, selfish desire. So generally speaking, there is no conflict between satya and rita. When there is no conflict between satya and rita, you should then practice rita, because there is no conflict anyway. But if there is a conflict, this was the Shivokti, one of the teachings of Sadashiva, was that you should practice satya. But most of the time there will not be a conflict between rita and satya, and then you should follow rita. In Mahabharata, there are innumerable cases when Krishna demonstrated the use of satya, and he followed satya, he did not follow rita. Whether it was the destruction of Jayadratha, or the destruction of Bhishma, or Drona, or Duryodhan, or Karna, almost all the leaders of Kauravas, Krishna destroyed by the practice of satya. But if it were the practice of rita, then none of those would have been, none of those could be destroyed. So what Krishna did was for the well-being of the society, for the well-being of the others, and that is why it is called satya. So within satya, then this idea of the well-being of the society is very important. Now, what happens in the practice of satya? What is the psychology? And what actually happens when you practice satya? Our mind is composed of what we call sthula, sukshma and karan. Three minds are there. Sthula, sukshma and karan. Causal mind. This causal mind or karanman is in close proximity with the spirit, with the atma, with the cognitive faculty. And as you know, cognitive faculty or consciousness is a reflection of cosmic spirit onto the individual mind. That is the difference between the unit consciousness, atma and paramatma. Paramatma, Atma is a reflection of Paramatma on a unit mind. So this mind is sthula, sukshma and karan. Karan mind is in close proximity with this consciousness, with the spirit. And as a result, karan mind, causal mind, has access to all knowledge, has access to proper spiritual faculties, spiritual knowledge, intuition. All these faculties are accessible to karanman, causalman. But how do we operate on a day-to-day basis? We do not operate by the causal mind, right? We operate by what? We operate by conscious mind, sthula mind. Sthula mind is the mind that is in contact with the physical body, and physical body through the indriya is in contact with the outer mundane world. So our conscious mind is constantly interacting with the mundane world. This conscious mind is, generally speaking, motivated by the, well, this conscious mind is essentially controlled by the subconscious mind. And subconscious mind essentially is a driving force, operates through the sanskara. So because of the influence of the subconscious mind, which means the sanskaras therein, that the conscious mind more or less acts based on the sanskara. This is especially true for non-human lives where the cognitive faculty plays a minuscule role compared to the human. So now, in order for us to have spiritual action, spiritual behavior, spiritual journey, spiritual movement in life, our mind, our conscious mind, which is operating the outer world, in the outer world, must be motivated by the karanman, causal mind. How do we do that? How do we motivate? How do we cause our conscious mind to be motivated by the causal mind? Therein comes the idea of satya. What does satya do? Baba gave an example. Baba said, suppose there is a vast amount of wealth. Suppose in this room there is a huge amount of wealth, but lights are off, everything is dark. You cannot see where the wealth is. All the wealth in the world, you will not be able to access it because of absence of light. So in a similar way, because of the influence of the sanskara, generally speaking, subconscious mind is always projecting itself through the conscious mind to the outer world. By practice of satya, what happens? When you practice satya, it basically creates illumination in the subconscious mind. And the subconscious mind in that case is able to interact with the causal mind. So basically you can say that by the practice of satya, there is a interaction developed between the causal mind and subconscious mind, sukshma man. And sukshma man then gains the knowledge, intuition, inspiration from the causal mind, and thereby is able to override the sanskara and guide the conscious mind into the spiritual action. So instead of being driven by the sanskara, the conscious mind is now being driven by the intuitional knowledge of the causal mind. And so you are able to take a position, which is, generally speaking, people don't take in the outer world. People take position according to their personal selfish desire, selfish gain, determines people's behavior. But when you are motivated through the knowledge coming from the causal mind, you are then able to stand on certain principles. So this is the psychology of what happens through the practice of satya. Now, we said earlier that You know, for the practice, Jama Niyama, practice of Jama Niyama helps develop the balance of the mind. And because of that, you are able to continue on with the introverted journey, internal journey. But at the same time, with the proper balance of mind, you are also able to practice principles of Jama more effectively. When you have a balanced state of mind, you are more in tune with your viveka, your judgment, and your rationality begins to dominate, and you start doing the right thing. And so, as a result, you are able to follow satya. When you follow the satya, what happens? The illumination comes into the subconscious. The word for this illumination, this light, is called oja. Ojaha or ojas. As a result of the practice of satya, ojas or ojaha results into subconsciousness, and a channel is there between causal mind and sukshma mind. So, balanced mind makes you follow satya, that gives you ojas, illumination into your subconscious mind, which then receives the knowledge, receives the motivations, receives the guidance from the spirit, coming from the spirit through causal mind, through the subconscious mind, and then it drives through the conscious mind to the outer world. And the person stands on the principles of satya. And the world is afraid of the person who follows satya, because the person who follows satya is a self-reliant person. Person is not afraid of anybody, person is not dependent on anybody, because the person knows that one who follows satya will be victorious. So, a device may be created for the well-being of the society, but when that device fails, the follower of the satya must destroy that device or should not support that device. Organization is created in order to properly serve the society. But if that organization that was created is not serving the society, but is being used as a tool of selfish fulfillment, you cannot support such behavior of any organization. Organization is a tool. That's all it is. So at that time, you must have the ojas, must have this inner spirit to stand firmly and clearly and not be afraid. What happens, you see, in most of the organization, what happens? People are afraid. They don't stand for anything. They're afraid. And they begin to identify organization with the adarsha. Adarsha and organization are not the same thing. But out of the fear, what happens? People support an organization which is not representing adarsha. It is the weakness on the part of the people. And that is just not what your immediate experience is. That has been true throughout the human history. During Nazi era also, people supported Nazis with full force, German people. But German people failed to realize that this thing was a terrible injustice to the rest of the world. Yes, it is true that Germany was heavily, suffered a lot of injustice at the end of the First World War, and Nazism came out of that. Yes, granted all of that. But nonetheless, the people of Germany, Germans, supported this Nazism. Because, and although some of them did know that this was not correct, but most of them did not stand up. And that is true everywhere. In our organization also, it is the same story. But in the end, as you can see, things are changing. Adarsha will come in the front. You need not continue to follow. You can try your best in order to to modify the situation, in order to change the situation. But sometimes people are unwilling to change, then you have to let it go. You cannot support wrongdoings. So this is satya. Satya means a person following satya, you know, just because person is self-reliant and powerful and courageous and a leader, does not mean the person has to be egotistic, arrogant, or power-hungry either. And if so, then the person is not following satya, because satya means to do something for the well-being, hita, of the others. And not only by your action, but by your mind also. And mind means all the organs of the body. It doesn't refer to only 10 organs of the body, but mind itself is one indriya. So satya means to perform hita of others with all might of your mind, all might, all force of your mind and body to do this action. And if you don't do it, then you are not following satya. And satya also is a very important force, because without satya, you cannot really follow other principles of Jhamma also. They are all interrelated. Satya is a very, very powerful upayanta that must be followed. And satya itself is Paramapurusha. Paramapurusha is the only satya. And it is called satya because it is a only permanent, non-changing entity. And that is why it is called satya, as opposed to jagat. Jagat means that whose very nature is to change. The Sanskrit dhatu is gama. Gama gacha means to move. Gacha. Gachami means I am moving, I am going. Gama. And from there the kridant is gata, means that which, whose very nature is to move, is called jagat. Which means something is constantly in flux, constantly changing. It is not truth. It's a relative truth. It's not false, but it is not absolute satya. Parampurush, supreme entity, is the only satya. So I will leave this thing open to discussion like we did last time. If you want to share, if you want your ideas. I think what we are learning is not some theory alone. It is there for us to be able to practice it in our life. You should not fear anybody. You should not fear, you should not follow everybody else. You should follow the truth. You should follow satya. And to follow satya, you should have a proper balance of mind. You should meditate properly and be humble in nature. You see, it's very, very important part of a spiritual aspirant is a humility. Humility means constantly be aware of the fact that, can I be wrong? Can I have made this mistake? What do I need to see? You know, am I making mistake? If you start thinking that way, then you will listen to others sincerely. Many people act like they're listening to others in order to create a particular image in the outer world that I'm an open person, I'm listening to the other person. It is for show. It's a hypocrisy. But a person who is truly humble will be processing what he is listening to see if I made a mistake. And if I made a mistake, that means I could be harming somebody. And that would then be violation of satya. You know, so, and we will also make a mistake too in our judgment. There's no doubt about that. That in order to follow the satya, sometimes because of the lack of information, sometimes we cheat ourselves too in making ourselves believe something, and we do some things. Sometimes we don't have correct information and we make a judgment, and that harms the society also, that harms the other person. sometimes by our own limitation, we do not execute satya properly. Knowing what the satya is, we are not able to execute it properly. Sometimes by lack of information, we don't know what the satya is. Sometimes because of our hidden selfish motive, which we are not aware of quite often, and we execute satya as an asatya. Because Lord Krishna killed Jayadratha, so I can do whatever I feel like doing. You know the story of how Krishna killed Jayadratha and how Krishna killed Bhishma. So you cannot do that. You have to think what Krishna taught by this. You cannot take on the organization and say, oh, this is an organization, it's for the well-being of the society, and I am the head of the organization, and I will preserve the organization. No, that's not the case. So organization is a tool that is made for the well-being of the society. When that tool is not functioning properly, you have to replace it. And you see all that is going on all around you all the time. See? So one cannot remain attached to the tool. And as you've seen yourself, that so many people have come and gone in the organization, a power comes from one part to the other, and everybody claims to be the torch bearer of the truth, isn't it? Everybody says, I am the truth bearer. Well, what is going on? What is the impact on the society? Somebody must be wrong. Somebody must be wrong. The society is being misguided. So, that is why meditation is very important. Intuitional practices gives us direct access to the causal mind, gives us humility, so that, you know, cautiously we create a pathway to the well-being of the society. So you should not fear, you should not remain inactive. Many people say, well, I don't know the satya, I'm not going to do anything. No, this is not right. Oh, I don't know satya, I don't know enough, I should not say anything. No, that is also not correct. You should think, you should practice to the best of your capacity and, you know, with the honesty in your heart. And you can make mistakes like everybody else. But if you're an honest and humble person, you will learn from it. And next time you'll be a greater asset to the society. So practice of satya is a direct channel to reaching Parampurush. Satya frees you from the attachment of the world. It gives you true vairagya. What is vairagya? You know? What is the word vairagya means?
Detachment.
Sorry?
Detachment.
Well, okay. Detachment could be interpreted in many ways. What is vairagya?
Vairagya is a state where you are you don't have any feeling of raga or dvesh without
beyond raga and dvesh.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's a good definition, but what does it mean in actual practice? How do you practice vairagya?
Basically, it's happiness and sadness, everything is same for you. You're not moving just because...
Okay, suppose that's true, yeah, and you are living your life in that way. It's very good, it's a spiritual life. But does vairagya end right there? Is there something more to it than just leading a spiritual life? Vairagya means detachment also. Vairagya means what you said. What do you think?
Well, I think it would just, from what I'm hearing on it, would mean to stay stable and grounded in your belief and in your...
What?
To stay stable and grounded, no matter what comes, positive or negative, into your life.
Right.
And to stay in the spiritual zone and not react either direction.
That's also part of it. But raga means attachment, we means to be free from attachment, but what it also means in practical day-to-day, how do you use vairagya? What does it mean in your daily life? That means proper use of everything around you, making proper use of the resources that are accessible to you. For what purpose? For what purpose?
For others.
For the well-being, for the practice of satya. Vairagya means proper utilization of resources, mental, supramental, and spiritual resources. Proper utilization of those resources for the practice of satya. Practice of satya is what? For the well-being of the others. So vairagya means proper utilization of the resources for the well-being of the others. Now, what you said and what you said is true in the individual life. What you said is partially to the collective life. So, practice of vairagya leads to spiritual enlightenment, and this vairagya is not simply going out. Vairagya is not renunciation, external renunciation. Vairagya is translated as renunciation, but it is not external renunciation. How do you renounce something? How do you detach your mind from something? You cannot detach your mind just living in the cave, not necessarily. It may not work. How are you going to detach your mind if you don't have it in the first place? How are you going to say that I am detached from the material objects when you never had material objects? There was nothing for you to be detached from. So, vairagya means proper utilization of the resources for the practice of satya, for the practice of well-being of the other society. And as a result, it brings you closer to Parampurush, closer to Supreme Entity, because it develops this rajuta. Rajuta means rajuta. There is a word called rajuta. Rajuta means this straightforwardness, simplicity of mind. It's a very, very important spiritual quality. Person who has rajuta, or person develops rajuta when they have this ojas. When rajuta develops, ojas also comes into the subconscious mind. And when the ojas comes, then you tap the superconscious mind through the subconscious mind, through the conscious mind, through the external world. So rajuta is simplicity of the mind. You know, fearlessly being a simple person to follow, to not have this complex, complicated mind in order to cheat others and cheat yourself. People use philosophy, people use all these long Sanskrit shloka and external vidvatta, scholars being a scholarly, to do what? To cheat themselves and to cheat others. First they cheat others, and they are aware they are cheating other people, and slowly, 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 as they repeat cheating others, they start cheating themselves. This is not rajuta. Rajuta means having no desire for such thing. Simplicity, standing by the others fearlessly, and practice of vairagya. So this is the essence of satya. You can read more about it in Guide to Human Conduct. And there are many examples of it that you can see through the Mahabharata, or in your day-to-day lives, you will see.
When you were talking about Rita, I had a hard time figuring out what she meant by the narration of the past events.
Okay, so yeah, let's give you a good question. It's an example of it. Suppose Suppose you make your judgment based on what has happened in the past, okay? Then what has happened is that you're simply accessing the past event in order to make judgment for the future. You're not thinking about what those events meant and how to move forward. And that is a bit of a mechanical judgment. Suppose you see somebody comes to your shelter saying that, okay, you know, such and such person is coming out to harm me. You know, in the middle of the night, somebody knocks on your door saying, hey, this guy's after me. You know, he's going to harm me. Give me a shelter. You open the door and shelter him. And then that guy comes and says, hey, did such and such person come? Is that such and such person here? So Rita would mean, yes, he is here. Because that's what happened. The fact. Rita means fact. Fact says the person is here. But you think that the guy's got a gun. This person told you that the guy is coming to kill me, right? And if you say, yeah, he's here, then this guy's going to shoot him. So satya means you're thinking of the well-being of this person. You're not simply looking at what happened in the past. It requires a certain amount of thinking and judgment on your part for the well-being of the others. If you're practicing Rita, then you would not have done that. Many times you go to the court, right? This is what it is. This is why you have two types of law, right? What are the two types of law, generally?
Civil, criminal.
No, not that way. Even within each one of them, you have coded law, law of the code, and case law. There are two laws, right? Do you know what that is? Okay, you have lots of books of laws that says if you did this, then you have committed this crime. And except these are the exception. But within this exception, so this is like this is like that. However, if this has happened, then this is this. It's like huge if and only if kind of logic, okay? And that logic is constantly changing because legislature is making the new law and modifying the law. But all of that is in the book, in the computer. And computer can say, well, this is right and this is wrong. Then why do we need lawyer? If that's all the law was, then why would we need the lawyer? What do the lawyers do? Lawyers interpret the code. How do they interpret the code? Now, suppose, what is justice? The purpose of the law is to deliver justice. If the coded law was enough, then you won't need lawyers. But coded law is not enough. Because suppose a judge made a particular judgment in a particular case. Now another judge in a very, very similar case makes an opposite judgment. Then what has happened? There is inconsistency in the law. So one of these two people has been injustice because they were opposite judgment on the same case, right?
Mm-hmm.
In order to prevent that, you have what they call case law. Part of being something being just requires consistency. You have to be consistent, otherwise you're not just. And in order to create this consistency, you have what you call case law. So what is a case law? The lawyer goes and argues that, you know, we have this case here. Very similar case was here, very similar case was here, very similar case was here, and this judge ruled in this way, this judge ruled in this way, therefore, you must rule it in this way. This is called case law. And in fact, judges follow the case law. Why is case law important? As the society changes, the coded law may remain 100 years old, but the case law, which is interpretation of that code in a situation, is determined by the case law. So satya is like a case law. You have to think. And not even 100 years, even 30, 40 years ago. I remember when I came from India, that's about 40 years ago, a divorce was treated in a certain way. And the way it was went through the court system. Today is all very different. The morals of what it was 40 years ago and even today are vastly different. And therefore, the court system, you know, rules it in a very different way. Marital infidelity was a big issue even back in 60s and 70s. As much as you hear about the 60s and 70s being a wild era, it was nowhere close to what we have today. So the case law has changed so much from 60s to today also. Even in 60s, we take it for granted. The blacks and whites, they were not allowed to go to the same school as early as mid-60s. Mm-hmm. Today, you cannot imagine that. You tell kids about that. It was like that in your time? They can't imagine. You see? So satya requires proper judgment. For what? Not for your selfish endeavor, but for the well-being of the others. And because of this, satya leads to spiritual life and intuitional development. And you are able to not guide by your sanskara, but by the satya, by the well-being, by the... that's the difference between animal and a man. Man is somebody who can override the sanskara behavior, can defeat the sanskara and leave correct path. It is very easy to follow your sanskara. Animals follow the sanskara. They don't think, they just do. They are driven by the propensities. Whereas man is driven by the mind and the intuitional principles of the causal mind should be the driving force of our behavior. So, any other thing on satya? Even in our society today, you see, look at such a hypocrisy, wild hypocrisy everywhere, you see. Media hypocrisy, political system hypocrisy, economy hypocrisy, democracy hypocrisy. What are you going to do? Very democratic values are hypocritic, yet those are the best there are. You see? So spiritual people should not run away from these problems and situation, but should participate and do something to bring about the change. And if you don't think, then you will become victim of dogma. You know, you need to think. You cannot blindly, you know, brand some things.
I suppose satya is more complicated than ahimsa.
Correct.
Because satya, if you see, different angles are there. As you said, it is not Rita.
Right.
Because Rita is easy.
Yep.
Okay, just follow the thing and keep following.
Yep.
You don't care, but your example of... So let us say I change the example a little bit, that the person came, he happened to be a murderer, and the follower was
trying to arrest him.
He wanted to arrest.
Right.
Now, and let us say you did not know that.
Correct.
Now, you may be protecting a murderer.
Yes.
So, and this is a simple example, because then you can be abetting for the crime, and then you might go to jail. And
also.
Right? And the same thing, say media, one example you gave, so... I watch a couple of channels. One is CNN and second is Fox. And you hear them and they are totally opposite of each other. CNN is saying something else and Fox has something else. One is against Obama, and second is not. If not against Obama, it's okay, kind of. I don't know what is true. So satya is something which is very difficult.
Yeah. It's not. At the same time, though, if you look at, if you can free yourself from Fox and MSNBC both, let alone CNN, MSNBC's left,
yeah,
and
yeah,
that
yeah.
one is right,
yeah.
even
yeah.
more than CNN.
Right.
But if you start looking at it carefully, then you'll see that there's hypocrisy in both of them. Mark is too. Mark is excessively supporting Democrats. The Democrats by no means represent morality and moral
mm-hmm.
values,
mm-hmm.
you know. And Republican always evil. Mark is real Republican. Oh, calm down, you know. And look at what Republicans are trying to say, what a person is trying to say. And there are differences. For example, in general, Republican values believe that you should follow coded law more. What's in the book you should follow. They are more go by the book people. Democrats more go by case law, which seems reasonable. This should be that way. But again, once again, it all depends on a given situation also, because you can take both sides and cause exploitation. And remember, balance is something that is, by definition, you know, opposite. You see, this balance cannot be this. This is not a balance. Balance is this. Balance is dynamic by nature, right? Because static balance is a death. Only time you have static balance is when you have a death. So this is a dynamic balance, that equal amount up, equal amount down, okay? In that situation, by definition, you have to push down on this side and push up on this side. As soon as they cross here, you have to push up on this and down on this. That is called balancing requires a negative feedback, right? Negative feedback, basically, you know, in your engineering, you have a negative feedback system is required in order to keep the system stable.
Mm-hmm.
Same way, balance is created by constantly providing negative feedback input back into the system to bring about the balance. So it's not a Republican or Democrat or MSNBC or Fox. They are simply on a different side of the things. And so personally, I have never voted except for two times in my life, because I don't feel inspired by any of these people. You know? And I may go out and vote on some of the issues and some like that, but sadly, I mean, even the media are supposed to be the fundamental to maintaining democracy, but when you think about it, medias are in the business of making money. Why? How can we expect them to have any ideological or values of truth, values of satya? They are in a business. They are there for making money and profit. You know, people that are buying their advertisement, they're going to represent their view. You know, the pharmaceuticals, you can't expect them to tell you the truth. They will push their drugs whether or not they work. So spirituality and spiritual values are, the source of it is in meditation and humility, and spiritual values, when they are derived internally, that person cannot harm the society. Now, person can make a mistake and harm the society. Yes, that's possible. But that harm will be minimal. And that is why, you know, many times I think, you know, is this Democrat or is this Republican? What is more important? What is important in a candidate? you know, are his voting history is important, or person's character is important. You know, suppose Romney says, oh, I can do this, I can do this. But, you know, if this, I know how to create a job. Yeah, you know how to create a job, but are you going to do that once you have the power? How do I know you're not going to fulfill your pockets when you are in power? Just because you can do it, are you going to do that for the well-being of the society? And that's when their character comes. Then you say, well, okay, we put person with character. Well, he has character, but does he have the skill to do that? So you have a character and skill opposing each other. I still, personally, at this point in my life, I still tend to favor character over the skill. Because, you know, when you look at Obama, Obama has nearly zero. I mean, it's probably one of the most unqualified president we've had in the history since he became. But he's okay, he's done fine. The president does very little in this country anyway, you know. So the character is very important. I would much rather have somebody whose views are not according to my view, but the person has a good character to be the president. I would like to vote for him. And for that reason, I will not vote. But if I am to vote at this point, I'll probably vote for Ron Paul. Not because he's Republican, not because he's Democrat or whatever. But at least he seems to give me an image of a person who has some belief, some value system, that has some focus, some ground. Although you can't agree with everything he says, but at least he's being truthful. So, you know, and that's the nature of democracy also, and that's the nature of the material world.
I have a question about something. Satya. So, sometimes people are very truthful, okay? But as part of being truthful, they can be very hurtful,
right?
Okay? So, I mean, I suppose a truth which can hurt people is not satya. So, I mean, I think what I'm trying to say, maybe truth is reflecting more like rit than satya. Satya, maybe,
yeah.
Because I don't know what is English translation
of satya. I know what
you're
saying. Baba said there is no proper word in English. But you see, what you're saying is execution. Satya is satya. The next step is how do you execute satya? And as you say, that I said earlier, right, that while executing satya, you may end up creating a satya effect because you're not executing satya properly, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah,
that the way in which person is expressing satya mm-hmm. is harmful.
So should you be following that satya? I mean,
well, I think Baba said that, you know, you should say the satya, but in a sweet way, not in
harsh way.
Wouldn't it depend on how it's benefiting the person? Because sometimes you can say something honest that might hurt the person, but over the course of time, it could actually benefit the person.
Correct. So you have to look at the situation. You know, first thing you always say in a gentle way, hey, you know, Ben, you shouldn't really drink alcohol. It's not good for you, you know?
Yeah.
You said, so you're still seeing, Ben, I saw you drink, you know? I mean, we need to quit that stuff, okay? It's not good for you, okay? Third time around, Ben, what's going on? Fourth time around, you chase him, get him out of there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So all four times, it's a satya.
Mm-hmm.
But
so
you should not jump at somebody first time around. And Baba said that you should use sam, dam, dand, and ved in execution of satya. Sam means understanding, explain them. Dam means pay him. Hey, okay, Ben, I'll pay you if you quit. You know, dam. Dand, I'll punish if you don't. Ved means you finally trick him. Right? As a parent also, you have to follow satya, you know? And sometimes you have to use danda, sometimes you have to use bed. You are doing bed means, by definition, you're going to be manipulating situation. You may be using rita, you may be using not, you know, you may be saying falsehood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Satya is,
you know,
more complicated.
Yeah. It is complicated, but if your heart is pure, if your mind is pure, if you have compassion in your heart, then and only then you will know intuitional path.
Mm-hmm.
So from that standpoint, it's not that hard. You know, you have to have faith in those principles, and they do work. But you can see, you know, Satya is not the kind of Satya that Gandhi Satya is what we are talking about. We're talking about Satya should have certain degree of viveka behind it. Logic and rational execution must be there. You may not believe in all this ritualistic thing that you see, but you don't go attack on people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody believes in Islam, you don't go and hurt his feelings saying this is total nonsense. No, you see what's going on with the person, you know, and what is the impact of what you say to that other person is, right?
Yeah.
They call it benevolent truthfulness.
Baba did not initiate everybody, right? Many people, he didn't, because the time wasn't right. And certain people, you know, were allowed to do certain things, other people weren't allowed to do the same thing, you know, because time and person is different. So in, like Sanjeev said, the execution of Satya, judgment of Satya requires much more thinking, rational behavior, constant understanding and inner growth, you know, spiritual development, all these things are necessary.